Well, joining us for his regular chat, and that's Mr. Ken Bates. Morning, KB.
Morning, Darren.
How are you?
Working hard.
That's what I like to hear. Or hardly working.
Well, now I've been... No. Now I've been told the government aren't going to pay for my retirement home. I want to put up, taxes. I've got to earn a crust.
Let's start.
Lord, there'd be nothing to put me caviar on.
there's a few bits to take in this week. Leeds United, the season's over now, KB. That's all done and dusted. A win on the last day of the season. They're over in Myanmar now. They lost their first game, but I suppose it's all focused on next season, really, now.
Yeah, well, they lost the first game 2-1, but it was against the national team, so we don't know the quality of... football out there, do we? So it's a bit important, this exercise. But they're over there getting to know each other, including the manager and the owner's there. And that's always a help because it means he can really get to know his players and his backroom staff. And then after they hit the deck running when they get back next week, then time for planning next year. You don't appoint your manager on the 25th of July. If you're going to change your manager, do it now. If you're not going to change your manager, then you stand up. Make it quite, state of intent, make it quite clear. Everybody's got to get on with it without the grim reaper hanging over your shoulder.
Yeah, it's going to be a crucial 30,000, season.
The last home game, pretty good attendance.
Yeah, it's been good attendances all season, hasn't it, really? It's been excellent when you consider the sort of dire football in the last 6 months. The crowds have still been turning up.
Well, so it's either that or listen to Diane Abbott.
Moving on to other football news, and some news that was breaking yesterday about another of your former clubs, KB, Chelsea, that they're going to be investigating allegations into some former coaches due to racially abusing youth team players during their time at the club. And Chelsea have said that they're going to be doing the right thing, fully supporting any player that's been affected
Chelsea
in investigation.
Yeah, Chelsea have said what they would be expected to say.
Yeah.
Good PR. But the reality is something different. I mean, in going back to those days, the whole of football was racist. And the worst of all, of course, was, I'm afraid, the fans, so-called fans. Chelsea was a very racist club, generally, and I'm talking about the fans there. The National Front had none of its headquarters there. In fact, they used to meet in the pub across from the main gate and wait until the team was announced. If there's no black players in the team, they walk across and buy their tickets. That's how hate-filled it was. And in fact, Chelsea were an all-white team, as were a number of other clubs in those days. And we were bringing black players through the youth ranks. And we had one particular one, Paul Cannavale. I remember he was named in the squad for the first time in an away game at Crystal Palace, Shadows Park. And as you know, with players warming up down the touchline, Paul Cannavale was having bananas thrown at him when he was warming up. And the next game was at home. I can't remember who we played. But John Neal gave Canners his debut. And he was getting so much abuse from a certain section of the crowd. Well, I went down to the touchline, and as the whistle went, final whistle went, I went onto the pitch and put my arm round him. And we walked off the pitch together to show solidarity. My way of telling the bad mouths, what I thought of them. And we got a small cheer from some section of the crowd, and that started it. But the end of it, of course, the ultimate irony of Chelsea was the first club, the first big club to appoint a black manager for it and have a number of black internationals, which was a whole circle. But what bothers me a bit, obviously I'm keeping an open mind about it, but I'm a bit curious about all these ancient coming outs so many years later. I haven't read much about this in the newspapers. I think I remember it being showed on, I think it was Sky. Not sure it's Sky or BBC. But there was this thing where they showed five men with their face shielded because sitting with their back to the camera, and a lady, a solicitor, claiming she spoke for them. And I thought, well, how are we going to make any progress? These people have to reveal their identities. And we'll have to name the people they felt were guilty of racially abusing them. And in the end, without being unkind, what did they do about it at the time? But if I'd been racially abused as a kid, I'd have told me dad. I expected him to support me. Or, of course, I could have left the club and joined another one. It's all very well to say, oh, well, I didn't want to say anything or do anything because it might harm my career. Well, if you've got the ability, plenty of other clubs looking out, snapping up young black kids. So the sniff of money is in the air. And I think in view of all the terrible miscarriages of justice over allegations of varied abuse, sexual, racial, etc., I think it's time that people should take a tough line. It's okay to name the people, name the times, what was actually said, what was your response. Because this is trial by smear. It's not good enough.
Okay, B, moving on to other football stories. And something that's caught my eye this week was something that Mark Hughes was talking about, a Southampton manager, about the dark arts in football. They've accused Swansea of trying to use those tactics, putting their team off ahead of the game a couple of nights ago by cancelling a hotel at the very last minute.
Rebounded in their face, didn't it? Because they were so bloody angry at WAG. Yeah, they might be one and one. But it is not unknown. In the paper yesterday, saw about Sam Haman. They were playing when he was running Cardiff. They had an important game for playoffs, and they set the fire alarm off at 4 o'clock. His bodyguard knew nothing about it, allegedly. But he helped them because they won 1-0. Got promotion. But happened to us in Chelsea under Blackburn. We had an important game at Blackburn. And somebody set the fire alarms off at 4 o'clock in the morning. So, of course, everybody was out. Two of the players in their pyjamas and dressing gowns, etc., etc. Wasn't the best way of preparing for a game, but fortunately that one we won. And it didn't have any effect. But you know, there's loads of dirty tricks. What was the one a few years ago? Was it West Ham or Tottenham who claimed their food had been treated the night before the game, so they'll woke up the next morning not feel very well. But never mind, didn't work. Hughesy kept Southampton up, I was glad to see. The Southampton are now down, I'm glad to see. So let's move on to greater things.
Just finally, KB, some really sad news that came out this week, that the Dowager Countess of Harwood, Patricia Lascelles, died at the age of 91.
Well, I hope I outlive her. No, Suzanne and I met Lord and Lady Harwood, obviously, when we took over at Leeds, and they were absolutely charming. He was a gentleman, and she was an absolute lady. And she was talented, and, I mean, you know, some people become famous because they're married to somebody famous. But Patricia Harwood was famous in her own right. She wasn't a celebrity, the whole one of them. But she did so much work she helped to rebuild and restore Harwood House to its former glories. They supported the Opera North. She created a famous flower garden, or bird garden, in the grounds. And every time she came into the room, all of a sudden the place looked up. It glowed. She had that atmosphere. It's so unpretentious. Old Lady Harwood. Oh, for God's sake, call me Patricia. And same with George. Call me George. That reminds me, he became, I'm going off the point a bit, but it's a very interesting story. Is it George became very fond of Susanna, always insisted she had to sit next to him around the table. And one weekend I had a call from Patricia and she said, can I hope you don't mind, but one of our relatives has invited himself up for the weekend. Would you mind if we brought him? She said, don't be silly. You're very welcome. So he turned up and the table plan was, there was Susanna, there was an unknown royal, and there was George, who previously told Susanna, call me George. So Susanna looked at the new royal visitor and said, sort of suitably deferentially, and how should I address you? He said, oh, sir, will be sufficient. Susanna went straight across him and said, hey, George, you okay for potatoes there? Or something like that. We put the sir in his place. Nobody spoke to him after that. But that was the homely family of the Harwoods. And Patricia was the head of it and also became the matriarch. She had a lovely family and none of them had any side. They came in, enjoyed their football, didn't sort of pull rank, just thought it was friendship. I remember them being asked to dinner one day, and what they'd done, of course, they'd taken a, created a small luxurious flat inside the big house where we went. And then we went in, after I went to the library, there's a 2-bar electric fire keeping us warm because George was a bit frail then. She was a charming lady. She was so generous, so sympathetic, so supportive. And things weren't going well. So happy for us when things were going bad. She was a very good friend of Susanna and mine. We are honoured that she treated us such. She loved her Leeds United. She loved Harwood House. She loved Yorkshire. And she loved the people of Yorkshire. I'm reminded, in closing, best thing you can say. Don't be sad for her passing. Think how much she enriched the world by her passing through. And that was Patricia Harwood.
Okay, B, as ever, it was a pleasure, and we'll catch up with you again next week.